Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I thank you so much for joining us here. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive the podcast at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And to that end, the program normally airs on the radio and has about a 50-minute duration, not including the commercials. And so we might have more than just the radio portion. So we encourage you to go to the website, go to the radio shows page, and listen to what we like to call the after view. And that means that that is the interview that continues after the 50-minute mark. Not that I'm going to tell you that, where it is, because every program's a little different. So we encourage you to check that out. We always have more information than we know what to do with. And we are very grateful to all of our guests who take that extra time to share with us here on the program. Today, we're going to have a return visitor. He is a Santa Barbara native as well, or at least he's a Santa Barbara resident. I'm not sure if he's a native. We'll find out as well. But we've had him on the program before, and I've had a great pleasure of meeting with him a couple of times. And he's in studio with us today, which is really nice. I love having in studio face-to-face guests because the energy obviously is a little different, and we'll have, a good time here on the program. Jim Drever is my guest, and he does live here in Santa Barbara. Are you a native?
No, I'm not a native. I'm a native of New Zealand.
New Zealand, all right.
I've been living in California for 40 years now.
Okay. How long have you lived in the States overall?
Just over 40 years. Okay. I came here in the early 70s, studied to be a chiropractor, Palmer College of Chiropractic in Davenport, Iowa. And my then wife and I were going to go back to New Zealand afterward, but one thing led to another, and here I am.
Yeah. So, as far as that's concerned, why would you come to the States to practice chiropractic unless there were problems in New Zealand where as you know, here in the United States, and I remember working for a radio station where we had chiropractors coming on in the 80s, and they were having all kinds of difficulties with the AMA primarily, you know, the traditional orthodox medicine.
Right, right.
Chiropractic was considered like alternative medicine. Yes. Or woo-woo or,
yeah, sure.
Witchcraft almost, you know.
Yes.
To some degree.
Sure.
And I've had wonderful chiropractic adjustments. Yes. Over the years. But why come to the States for that?
Well, there's no chiropractic college in New Zealand, so most chiropractors who were in New Zealand came to the States to Palmer College of Chiropractic to study, and my intention was to come here, study, get my graduate, and then go back to New Zealand, set up a practice, but it didn't happen. I had this health crisis in my last year in chiropractic college, which kind of started me on my spiritual journey. And then I got interested in the teaching of Jay Krishnamurti, who lived in Ojai, California. So I wanted to be near him. So I came to California, and we actually looked at buying a practice in Ventura. But we had friends up in Northern California, and we decided to set up a practice there instead in Santa Rosa, California.
So you've been in California for some 40 years,
yeah.
A little longer than that in the States, and you're not practicing chiropractic at this time?
I practiced for 25 years, for a few years in Santa Rosa and then mainly in Sebastopol, which is west of Santa Rosa. And then I quit practicing in 2003 when I had three strokes.
Whoa.
And the third stroke put me in the hospital for 6 days, and I couldn't practice anymore. I spent a year and a half or so recovering from the strokes, and that's a whole other story.
So, as you
speaking of stories,
yes, right? Exactly. So, you said that the process that you've been through has led you through a spiritual journey.
Yes.
What was that? Was it the three strokes that were the catalyst?
No. It was before that, in chiropractic college.
Okay.
In my last year in chiropractic college. And I thought I was having a heart attack, and if I didn't control my breathing, I'd stop breathing and die. All these weird stuff went on in my consciousness. And I realized I needed to slow down. I was very uptight. I was very driven, goal-oriented. And I realized I needed to slow down, take time to smell the roses. And I took a course in meditation, TM meditation, began reading books on spirituality and psychology. And gradually my whole process shifted. I wanted to be a writer. I would want to be a novelist like Ernest Hemingway and achieve some kind of recognition as that. And even when I was studying to be a chiropractor, I really wanted to be a writer. And then as a result of this health crisis, the direction of my writing changed. I was more interested in finding meaning in my own life. So I was writing about really the man's search for meaning, and specifically my own search for meaning. And that's resulted in my, you know, the writing I've ever done ever since.
And the gentleman that you said you came here to follow, or at least to absorb his teachings, his name?
Jay Krishnamurti.
Jay Krishnamurti. Okay.
Yeah.
And, name is familiar.
Yeah, he died in 1986 at the age of 91, but he lived in Ojai for 6 years and traveled the world speaking to large groups of people.
What was it about his teachings that were so compelling that you had to come to find him?
Well, I found him through my health crisis, but he wrote about freedom. He wrote about inner freedom,
mm-hmm.
and free of religion, free of beliefs, free of everything.
Mm-hmm.
True inner freedom, and that was what I was interested in. So I came to California eventually to find that freedom.
You have written. There's a book that you've written. We had you on the program to talk about
right.
that, having to do with basically, in essence, getting rid of one's stories, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. The book is called End Your Story, Begin Your Life, and it's available actually in a local bookstore here in Santa Barbara, Paradise Found Bookstore.
Very familiar with it.
Yeah.
Over there. Yeah.
End Your Story, Begin Your Life, and that's still in print, and that's really I went on the search for awakening. I've sought awakening within myself,
mm-hmm.
or enlightenment, as you call it.
Yeah.
And I had a teacher named Jean Klein. After I moved on from Krishnamurti, I found this man named Jean Klein, who actually lived in Santa Barbara. And he was awakened and wrote books on awakening. And I met him in 1984. And then I finally woke up in 1995. I had this my awakening,
mm-hmm.
and when I realized I wasn't any story. I have stories. We all have stories, right?
Oh yeah.
We all have lots of stories.
Throughout our lives.
We both have a story about how we got here this morning,
mm-hmm.
what we did this morning before we got here.
Oh, I could tell you stories, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. and that's the name of your show, Tell Me Your Story, right? But the key to freedom is realizing we're not our stories. We are the seeing, the clear seeing, the behind our stories. The stories come and go. The shifts and change throughout our lives. The story shifts and change, comes and goes. What we believed 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, maybe we don't believe now because we have a different story, a different perspective.
Yeah.
But something fundamentally doesn't change, and that is what I call the seeing, the awareness, the beingness that we are, And that's what my book is about, End Your Story, Begin Your Life. And then my new book called Flowing and Freedom, which is still only in PDF form.
Mm-hmm. Flowing and Freedom. Interesting because I've talked with people about this on numerous occasions. I've brought this up in interviews. I remember where it's an observation on my part. And that's all it is. And it comes from a document, a rather famous document, and the quote from it is, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among those rights," it's not just these three, "but among those rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And one of the aspects of that that struck me many years ago was the fact that among those rights are life and liberty. Okay, so the implication is we get those. Those are ours, life and liberty, right?
Yes, right.
But they don't say you get happiness. You can pursue it, but you can't have it in a real semantical sort of way.
Right.
And one of the thoughts that has occurred to me, and I'd like for you to maybe elucidate on this in this regard, because you're talking about this whole aspect of awakening and understanding your place, my place in the universe, and in our spiritual walk. And my observation is not that liberty and freedom and privacy among three are bad or wrong. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is that they are illusions. They aren't real. They're constructs like time is a mental construct right. of man. And that in the grand scheme of things, we have no privacy. If we're all connected, and we're connected to that higher self, which knows all. I remember thinking as a kid that God, I had one day I was sitting in Mass, I think it was like 7 or 8, and I used to make little movements. I was fidgeting a little bit, but I started thinking, they say that God is omniscient and omnipotent and omnipresent, and he knows what I'm going to do. Oh, he knew I was going to move my finger, and he knew I was going to blink, and he knew I was going to do this, and I thought I was going to drive myself crazy.
All right.
But I thought, well, and I took that to a new level when I started working for a Christian radio station. I thought, well, if he knows all, he already knows all my secrets. So what difference does it make if 7.5 billion other people know,
yes.
and most of them don't care on that ego level. Uh-huh. They don't care. They're too busy surviving
right.
and trying to make a living
right,
and
right.
feed their family and so forth. So privacy, it's irrelevant. It's
right.
it's an illusion.
Good.
And liberty is the same thing. If we're all connected, I affect you, you affect me. I don't have the liberty to go out and I don't know where you parked your car, but I have this bat and I'm going to stand 3 feet from your car. I'm just going to swing it around and it doesn't matter. You know, I don't have the liberty, you know, to just start swinging it around and destroying everything in its path.
Right.
You know, that's just, I'm going to have an effect is really the point.
Right.
So that aspect of liberty and then the freedom aspect, I want to get into the aspect of that higher self and following our intuition.
Right.
Listening to that still small voice. Because if we do that, then we're letting go of our ego, our personality, and we're acknowledging there's something greater. I have a greater purpose. I have a meaning in life. You made that comment
yes.
as well. And I need to be about that because if my life has no meaning, it doesn't matter whether I rape and pillage and plunder the villages along my path or not because life has no meaning. My life has no meaning. But I inside, I don't know where it comes from. Maybe you can explain it to me. I know that my life has meaning,
yes.
that my life has a purpose and that I can't go about raping, pillaging, and plundering the villages,
right.
you know, because that's not my purpose.
Right.
I've got something bigger and better and greater and higher that I need to be about. Can we talk a little bit about those aspects of,
yeah.
of a spiritual walk and how it goes into flowing
in freedom? Beautiful. Well, we are free. I mean, underneath all our beliefs about restrictions and convention and so on.
This is where the stories come in.
Right, the yeah. stories. We are free. We're free here now. And life, when we discover our true purpose, life has meaning, right? Purpose and meaning are intimately related. So, and then happiness, you know, the Declaration of Independence talks about the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is affected our true nature. That's the thing that my book is about flowing in freedom. It's called subtitle is Mastering the Shift into True Happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And the shift happens when we realize that our true nature is happiness. And the happiness that we normally know, which comes from achieving our goals, for example, there's definitely happiness in that, or luck or good fortune, or we somehow get more money. That makes us happier. But that happiness is dependent upon circumstances. And I'm interested always in the happiness that doesn't depend on circumstances,
mm-hmm.
the happiness that shines on its own.
Because circumstances are nothing more than stories.
Right. Well, we can have our circumstances without a story, like you and I are sitting here opposite each other.
Right.
With microphones in front of us, and that's our circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
We could tell a story about that or not.
Mm. Okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I could be happy or not under these circumstances.
Right.
Is it a choice? Is it strictly a choice, or is it something that we can move into over the course of time with practice,
yes,
whatever that practice might be. And I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate or what have you, to stay in that phase, if you will, of happiness,
yeah,
that mode?
Absolutely it is. That's the whole purpose of the spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole purpose of awakening or enlightenment, self-realization. We discover that our true nature, when we're not identified with any story,
mm-hmm,
and we're just being here now, abiding in the pure being of our true nature, we are happy. There's no emotional state is one of ease, harmony, and flow. I use that expression a lot, ease, harmony, and flow. When we're not identified with any story, we're just being, we experience, yeah, ease, harmony, and flow.
I remember also, and I had a great, I would say sort of an awakening of sorts that really took place at this Christian station. Great education, the best education that I was ever paid for.
Uh-huh.
I didn't pay for it. I got paid to attend because it was my job. And one of the things that I came across, because I kept hearing this biblical passage over and over and over again, be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I'm, okay, that sounds pretty good, but what is perfect? What does it mean? And I began to do some research, but more, I began to ponder it. And I thought, well, okay, well, as your Father and as God is perfect, okay, well, what does that mean? What is perfection? And if God is perfection, then what is that? And I thought, well, it can't be good versus evil, because God is neither.
Right.
God is God. It can't be good versus bad or right versus wrong and on and on, all the dualistic constructs. And then, of course, I remembered a lot of the passages from the Old Testament, you know, I am God. Be still and know that I am God. And then it dawned on me, perfection is just to be.
There you go.
And that's what you're talking about.
Yes, I'm being.
Is getting to that place, and is that is what you would refer to as that state of happiness?
Happiness or beingness.
It's not elation, because that's more of a human emotion.
Right, and elation comes when something particularly good happens.
Right. And I found that interesting, too, that when something good happened, God was given, you know, thanks was given to God for making it happen. If something bad happened, the devil was accused of making it happen,
yeah,
and
sure,
I was not responsible in any way, shape, or form.
Right, right.
And I thought, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, we're either responsible for our lives or we're not.
Right.
So what are some of the steps that we can look to, especially when we're talking about flowing in freedom, mastering the shift into true happiness? What are some of the steps to start making that shift?
So the first step is to notice when we're unhappy or when we're lost in thought. We do, in my book, we do a simple practice. We notice we're lost in a story, thought, or suffering in some way. We immediately say the mantra to ourselves, be the seeing, be the seeing. And then we relax into the seeing that we are, the seeing. We look inwardly and we notice how our thoughts and stories come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Our beliefs and emotions come and go. Even our feelings and emotions come and go. But we, the seeing, are always here. So that practice, is, as you do it over time, you become more and more used to being, I'm stopping, I'm getting caught up in my story.
Okay.
And then when we notice we're getting caught up in our story, we stop, we breathe. We ground ourselves here in the present moment, and we be the seeing. Now, the more we're being the seeing, when the more we're being in this moment, present in this moment, then we have more clarity and insight as to what to do next. And then we can have the results we have. So be, do, have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being, the Tao Te Ching says the true action. Yeah, true doing always flows from being. So the more we're able to just be here now, then the more we can have insight as to what to do, and then we'll have the results we have. And if the results we have change or shift or we lose them, we're not so freaked out, because we're already established in being. The more established in being we are, the more happy we are, regardless of our outer circumstances.
So it's not about the having.
No.
Or even the doing. It is more about
the being. That's the essence of my teaching. Mm-hmm. And the more you establish in being, the happier you are.
What's the difference between that and, say, being in what, especially in sports circles, is called being in the zone, where you're just, now, again, this is part of the doing, but you lose total track of time, and it can be anything. It doesn't have to be sports,
sure.
But using that analogy.
Yes.
I mean, I found myself working on a project, and I'm just, I'm deep into it. I mean, mentally, right. I mean, I'm just so focused. I forget about everything. And the next thing I know, 3, 4, 5 hours have gone by.
Right.
Really? Wow. And then I've got this wonderful finished project that, you know, I have that I was doing.
Right.
In the process of just being in that moment and being, and you know, being who I am and fulfilling, if you will, fulfilling my purpose, being on purpose,
right.
If you will, that type of stuff.
Yeah, there's no real difference. It's just being in the zone is like really being in the flow of being, doing, and having. It's all one thing.
What would you say to someone who is on the surface, they say, hey, that sounds great, Jim. You know, I would love to do that. But, you know, I just went through Hurricane Irma. My home was completely wiped out. Or my home was just burned to the ground in Northern California.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I was in Las Vegas during the mass shooting. Or whatever other challenge, if you will, that man faces as he lives his life or her life.
Right.
I can't do that now. That's so far away. I've got too much to think about, you know, to be focused on trying to be.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a simple answer that the more established you are in being, then the more you see clearly what needs to be done, including rebuilding your house, for example. Now, if your house burns to the ground, you're going to grieve it, of course, grieve the loss. But it's a then you're going to get up, pick yourself up, and get on with the task of rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, everything happens better when you're in the flow, when you're really present with your circumstances, when you have no story going on, so you see more clearly. When you have no story going on in your mind, you see everything more clearly. Your intuition functions better. Creativity is better. Everything happens better.
Mm-hmm. You said you had 3 strokes.
Right.
But you were already on your spiritual journey.
I was already awake. I'd woken up to my true nature 8 years before, so that allowed me to, of course, I didn't like the strokes happening, but what can you do, right? It's what is.
Exactly.
It's happened.
Exactly.
And several people who didn't know me very well said, gosh, you must have been terrified. I wasn't terrified at all. I just flowed with what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 6 days in the hospital, 4 in intensive care. Then I came out of the hospital. I was lying in my then girlfriend's bed in Santa Rosa, and I couldn't speak properly. I couldn't think clearly. My whole bright side was paralyzed. I couldn't smile. I had 36 sessions of speech therapy over 6 months to heal again. But I was awake, and I as I lay there, these jumbled thoughts would float through my mind. And then suddenly I had this clear, distinct thought. Thank God I'm free. Thank God I'm free. Because I had no fear of death. When you're awake, you know yourself as consciousness, as pure awareness, that which was not born and does not die. So I had no fear of death. But then a little while later, another thought floated, concretized, or became clear in my mind. Okay, I have no fear of death, but do I want to live? And I was only 57 at the time, and I realized, my God, yes, I do want to live. I still, my book, End Your Story, Begin Your Life, wasn't done completely. I enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed socializing. I enjoyed living. Yeah, I want to live. So I formed the clear intention to get well, heal myself. I did a daily visualization of blood flowing through my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am.
I have to think that I've got to be somewhere along that spectrum, because my wife and I were evacuated for the first time in 11 years. We went through 10 fires that threatened our home, where we live today. And it was the 11th fire, the Whittier fire, where they came and they blasted their sirens and they said, "You've got 10 minutes to get out." Now,
that was recent, right?
That was very recent. It was July 2017. And even though from a legal standpoint, we could have said, no, we're staying, didn't feel right to me. Now, we're still living in the same place. We were not in any danger in the final analysis. The fire was still another mile or two away from us. But, you know, as we all know here in Santa Barbara and the South Coast, you never know what is going to happen in the next minute.
Right, sure.
So we got out. And I have to say that there were several thoughts that went through my mind. Number one was, after we had secured all of the animals and gotten them safe and we were safe, I thought, you know what? Let it come through and burn us out. I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm going to be sad over the fact that I'm going to lose my entire library of books,
right,
and those and the equipment and this and that and the other. But I have done enough preparation as far as from a digital standpoint to where I've got it preserved elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to lose a lot of the stuff that we've collected over the last 20 years that my wife and I have been together, and even stuff that I've had from before. Because, okay, it'll be a fresh start. Get to start over. Get to a new adventure. I mean, that's the way. And then as we were out of our home for 10 days in three different motels and then a friend's house, I was looking at it as a working, because I still had to go to work, a working staycation.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I thought, this is kind of neat. You know, I can now write reviews and send them to Yelp and about these different hotels. I mean, just all of these different kinds of thoughts, as opposed to, oh my God, the fire and because when I first moved here in 2006, and the first fire, smoke of fire that I saw was the Perkins fire, which was up near Cuyama, north of us, I had no points of reference. It could have been in the backyard. I wouldn't have known the difference because, again, I had no points of reference, and there were no real, you know, I'm not real great at distances. I mean, it was obviously miles away.
Right.
We had the Zaca fire that came very close to us, and the T fire, the Hayseseda fire, the Gap fire, and on and on and on and on. I started out in this process 11 years ago fearful because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to call. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know how to do any of the stuff that I know today. That has actually transformed from fear and angst to anger and frustration. Frustration over having to deal with this. Right. Having to even, who's the idiot that did whatever they did, that started this fire, whatever the fire was, that has now inconvenienced not just me, but my neighbors and this entire mountainside. And again, and that's where the anger is and the frustration over having to do any of this stuff. You throw stuff into a suitcase. I mean, we literally had just finished doing laundry in the dryer, and we took a suitcase and we just pulled all the laundry into the suitcase and zipped it up and so forth. But that's kind of where I was in this last one. It was the first time we've ever been evacuated, and I thought, yeah. You know, there's an upside to this. You know, we get to make a fresh start if that were to happen. You know, yeah, we'll go through. And I've seen people. I mean, I my heart goes out to those I've seen on television who are emoting in front of the camera.
Right.
That's got to be quite an experience in and of itself.
Because the house is burned to the ground. There's a wonderful Zen saying, actually, now that my house is burned to the ground, I have an unobstructed view of the rising moon. So this Zen master is maybe he grieved his house burning to the ground, but he's so free that he lives so much in the moment that he knows the rising moon and that's the key. You've got to, when you awaken, you live more and more in the moment.
Yeah.
Because this moment now is all there is.
Yeah. It's like I said before, you know, our family was basically safe. My wife and I, we were out of the firing line, if you will, no pun intended. Our animals were secure and safe at the Humane Society. We had a place to live, and fortunately we had the resources, which I'm thankful that we had the insurance that we did because we got reimbursed for that. But then we also had a friend who lives here in Santa Barbara who he and his wife put us up for a couple of days.
Good.
So, you know, it all kind of flowed, and I was less bothered by what was happening to us, even though, you know, we We had to pack up and move 4 times, obviously. Yeah. Well, 5 times when we moved back home again, which was rather interesting. And I'm thinking, you know, if I ever go on a tour or something, is this what I want to do? You know, it was sort of like, this is sort of the universe's way of showing you, all right, if this is what you want to do, then I'm going to give you the experience at home. I'm going to give you the experience of going from hotel to motel to motel.
All right.
Very, very interesting. The process of again, the being versus the doing or the having, which is the process that it goes through. And that is a sort of a universal flow, isn't it? I mean, that's if you are in that place of being, then you're going to be doing those things that are going to allow you to have the things that I don't want to say that you want, but that are for your life's purpose, for in your best interest.
Yeah.
Because maybe a Corvette or a 15-room mansion, you know, if I badger the universe enough, I might get it. But is it really in my best interest? Is it really part of my life's purpose?
Right, right.
What about those kinds of perspectives?
Well, you, in terms of having, then you have what you want. And certainly, you know, we rent a house, you know, we rent a condominium. Mm-hmm. I would love to own a house.
Sure.
I've owned houses before, but, you know, under different circumstances. I made a lot of money before. You know, I was in a chiropractor, very successful for a few years. But the money was always less important to me than finding the truth.
Right.
I wanted to find the truth. And now that I've found the truth, I'm interested in sharing it, getting my message out there, which is a message that's being shared by many people.
Right.
The message of being first. Become established in being. The more established you are in being, the more your actions, your doing arises out of being, and you have what you have, the results you want. But and there's nothing wrong with having a house and a car and a Corvette and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or depending on, you know, maybe I would have bought a Corvette when I was younger, but now I'm more interested in an SUV maybe.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I don't have one.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. And at the same time, in the process, in that space of being, for myself anyway, and I would have to say 99% of the time, I'm quite content with that which I do have.
Yes.
In terms of the physical material things, in terms of the relationships, in terms of the work, you know. I remember hearing this phrase, I can't complain, and if I did, who'd listen? And who'd care?
Right. Sure.
Jim Drever is my guest, and we're talking about his latest work, Flowing in Freedom, Mastering the Shift into True Happiness. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Well, stay where you are. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I thank you so much for staying with us. And we're talking with Jim Drever. He is a Santa Barbara resident who formerly chiropractor, and now he's been on his spiritual journey, as many of us are. I've been on mine since I was 17. At least that's sort of the unofficial start date for me. And that's a lot of years, which is kind of amazing to me. We're talking about Flowing in Freedom, Mastering the Shift into True Happiness. And the word mastery, to master something.
Yes.
I've met a lot of people who have their PhDs.
Right.
And I guess the next step after that is a master's degree. Yeah. I can't remember which comes first, the chicken or
the master's degree comes first.
Okay. Then the PhD. Okay.
PhD stands for, some people say it stands for pile
higher. Higher and deeper, yes. and in some cases, that is absolutely true. I have an honorary, shall we say, doctorate.
Yeah.
As an audio physician, I was given that title several years ago by one of our programmers, and it's kind of stuck. I kind of like it. It's interesting, but I meet so many people who have their PhDs, and I'm thinking, why is that PhD so important that so many people seem to want to have those letters after their name? You know, what is it that draws people to that level of education and I suppose understanding? and expertise.
Yes.
I would suspect that those of us on our spiritual journeys, at some point, we must cross the threshold of mastery and PhD-ism, if you will, you know, because some of us, you know, some of us are working really hard at just trying to make it through from moment to moment, trying to be,
right,
trying to keep things level, trying not to be swung. A great analogy was there's a pendulum swinging, and you get to choose where on that pendulum you're going to sit. Are you going to sit at the very bottom of the pendulum, and you're really going to swing from one extreme to the other, or are you going to work your way up that pendulum, maybe to the top, where all you do is you pivot. You just kind of pivot,
right,
back and forth, and there's hardly any movement, and you're doing great, and you're living your life, or somewhere in between. And a lot of folks are somewhere in between those extremes.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about, if we can put it in this context, I suppose, our educational journey through our spiritual lives. I mean, you've described a little bit of yours, you know, and obviously when we come into this world, I guess you might say we're in kindergarten of sorts.
Right.
Or, I don't know, I suppose I was thinking a lot about these kinds of things when I was 7 or 8, like when I was sitting in Mass,
right,
thinking about God, who was thinking about me, who knows I'm thinking about him.
Right. So it's interesting that Jesus said, you know, except ye be little children, shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. And so in a way, the mastery in this field, and mastery, I want to say this, is just total embodiment of our true nature here and now in this moment. So mastery really is only something that can be realized in this moment. Mastery in terms of awakening. We can only be awakened present here now in this very moment. This is all we have. You know, no matter what the clock says, right, the time is always now.
Mm-hmm. For example, and I've used this analogy many times, I have my sound editing and recording software on my screen.
Yes.
And there is, as we are speaking and as we are recording, there is this line that is sort of a white line. And on the left side of the line is the wave, which represents our voices,
right,
as we're conversing. On the right side of the line, nothing. Nothing has happened yet. That's the future. And the wave that appears is the past. So the moment of now is the line. And that was one of the things that I thought of, you know, not too long ago when I was looking at it going, wow, that's where we want to be before anything is spoken. And, you know, and there's nothing in the future. And it's just that line right,
yes,
there.
Which is right here, right now.
Yeah.
And then we're truly present, which we're experiencing mastery in this moment. And so it's an unlearning. In terms of education, what I'm teaching is really an unlearning of all we previously learned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so it's, and the more you become as a young child, innocent and open, the freer you are.
You know, that's very interesting. Come to me as little children, not childish,
yeah,
childlike.
Right.
There's a big difference.
Sure.
Big difference.
Because we have all the wisdom of being an adult. We have all the wisdom and experience and knowledge of being an adult. But we realize we're not that wisdom, we're not that experience, and we're not that knowledge. We are this here now, established and being here now.
Yeah.
Being here now, awake and alive, present, our hearts open, our mind empty, alert in this moment.
I'm curious, through this process that you've been through and the creation of both books, including the Flowing in Freedom, you have been faced with those moments in time in your life where being here now, being in the moment, has maybe become, has been somewhat of a challenge, or have you reached that point where, not to say that you've perfected it, but you've reached a certain level where it may be just an instant of that being pulled, trying to be the situation is trying to pull you out of the now, okay, to right. start rummaging through the stories.
Right.
It may only be for an instant, but you've learned and mastered to the degree where now, oh, wait a minute. No, got to pull back.
Right. It's a I live my own teaching, right? I flow in freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom is always just here now. And yes, I can occasionally get pulled out of my backed into a story, but it very rarely. Mm. I live in a relationship with a woman, and living in a relationship with another person, occasionally things happen and you can get caught up in a story.
Oh yeah.
But I remember that very quickly, and I come back to breathing and being here now.
And I mean, just the things that we are barraged by as far as information, it's almost like our technology is almost, I don't want to say that it, because I will be giving it some level of anthropomorphic
power,
but it's almost as if our technology is not serving us well.
Right.
But actually, the truth is, we are allowing the technology to interfere with
yes.
our ability to be here now.
Exactly. I remember hearing an interview on the internet about Google engineer, and he'd kind of left Google because he saw what Google was doing, and all technology companies were doing. They were creating programs designed to suck people in to being more distracted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. I think I saw that.
Yeah.
And at first, and I have to say that back in 1994, when I was first introduced to my first computer, I think it was 94, and I remember thinking, too, of course, the computer at that time wasn't hooked up to the internet.
Right.
It hadn't been put online yet, but it was very close. And when it was, the first thing that went through my mind was, if I'm on this World Wide Web and everybody else is on it, that gives a nice metaphor for being connected. But that's where the whole concept of privacy goes out the window.
Right, sure.
Okay. Now, certainly we weren't at the level yet of viruses and getting the programming to counter the viruses and all of the malware and all these kinds of things.
Ransomware.
But at the same time, it was at a level where you did not have, well, you probably have less anonymity today than you did then, but nonetheless, my mindset was, there's no privacy on this thing.
Right.
I'm standing out in the street naked, right. in essence. And so I was at that point already acknowledging that if I go here, my whole life is laid bare. Well, I didn't worry about that because I've been doing interviews for so many years. Anybody that's been following them could actually write my unauthorized autobiography or right. biography
right.
because I share so much about who I am.
Right.
The stories. I share the stories, the little bits and pieces about working here and doing this and having this relationship
right.
and experiencing these things. I go back to that same premise. If God knows, the Supreme Being knows, the higher self knows, then what difference does it make if 7-8 billion people know? And again,
right.
most of them don't care.
Right, exactly. They're too busy with their own lives.
Now, I'm curious, too, as far as this aspect of flowing in freedom. It makes me think about water, for example, that is, it's always going to take the path of least resistance.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because a lot of folks, they want to develop that spiritual aspect of themselves to get – there's sort of an end game for them.
Right.
But for you and I would have to – at least I can only speak for myself. There is no real end game. There is no end game. There is no, all right, I'm going to get to this point, and this is what I'm going to have, this is what I'm going to be, and this is what I'll be doing.
Right.
Because it's constantly changing.
Right. So it's a we're always in a state of flux change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about discovering, spirituality is really about discovering what doesn't change. And what doesn't change, there's only one thing that doesn't change, is mm-hmm. the awareness we are, the seeing, the beingness we are. We're the changeless beingness, experiencing the ever-changing circumstances, stories, emotions, feelings of life.
Mm-hmm.
But we ourselves are changeless, and discovering that changelessness within us is what awakening is all about, discovering what doesn't change in us. The ego thought, the thought the most person identify with, the me, myself, and my story thought, that changes too. We've got to see that. That the storyteller is no more real than the stories it tells.
Mm.
When we see that, and yet we are still here, you and I, as conscious beings, are still here, that's freedom.
And that freedom is not in the context of what we might think of, as I used as the example at the beginning of the program, in the context of our Declaration of Independence and Constitution. That's not the freedom that we're talking about. What is it, biblical passage? I think it was Paul who said something along the lines of, do not fear the man who can destroy the body.
Right.
Because the soul is, that's the core.
Right.
That's the essence.
The timeless and
that's where the freedom
eternal.
Is.
Eternal, yes. And no, discovering that in us is freedom. Then you can be sitting in a prison, locked up in a prison by some power outside, and you're still free.
Yeah. And for that matter, even people who are not inside a physical prison, they may be living in even maybe a relationship, or they're working in a job that they feel like they're stuck. They're imprisoned in that situation.
Right. That's his story about it.
Right.
The story is, my God, I'm in jail here.
Mm-hmm.
A story about boredom. You know, people work at jobs all the time where they get bored. But boredom is a state of mind which is searching for something more stimulation. And again, the practice of freedom, the practice of awareness, consciousness, beingness brings us back. Whenever you notice yourself caught up in a story, a thought about boarding, being bored or whatever, notice that, and the very noticing brings you back to more presence here now.
Wonderful journey that, you know, you and I have been on over the years as individuals, I ask our guests about this quite often, and that is our evolution as a species, but that's talking about the human aspect.
Yes.
And I asked one of my guests not too long ago, I said, do you think that maybe we'll get to a point evolutionarily where we won't need the physical body anymore? We won't have to come here to experience this because we'll realize we really don't need this.
You're asking me what I think about that?
Yeah.
It's an interesting story, and then I bring the conversation right back to here now. I'm interested in practical things that work, like to improve our lives here now. And the thing that I know that improves your life totally is awakening mm-hmm. to the truth of who and what you are.
Mm.
And that's what I teach.
Well, I encourage people to certainly pick up a copy. I know you say it's only available right now in PDF form.
Right. So it's available on my website. Mm-hmm. If you go to my website, www.jimdreva.com, JIMTDREAVER, jimdreva.com. They can get it from there.
And we will be linked to your website as well because we want people to continue to find out more about you and what you're doing. Now, you've already stated that you're no longer, for many years, of course, have not been practicing chiropractic. But what I found interesting as I began to research it and...
Chiropractic. Yeah.
Not for the purposes of becoming one, mind you, but for understanding it. I came up with this sort of simple analogy that it's like when the skeletal structure gets out of whack, the muscles, all of the tissue starts to move in that general direction of disorder, shall we say.
Sure.
And as a chiropractor, you go in there and you attempt to gradually move that skeletal structure back into order into proper form and position. But it has to be done over a course of time so that the tissue will go back to that original memory that it had.
Right.
It's like a bunch of rubber bands. If you right. twist it and then you hold it there for a while, it's going to eventually lock into that position
yes.
because the rubber starts to dry out.
Right.
So now you've got to sort of moisten the rubber and then move everything back into its original position.
Right.
And that's kind of what we're talking, I think, what we're talking about here as well, because weren't we, from your perspective and your research and all of the things that you've studied as you've gone through all your right. spiritual walk, isn't that kind of what we're doing on a spiritual level?
Yeah,
trying sure. to get back to, in a manner of speaking,
back to like right here, right now.
Yeah,
but free of any thought or story right now, just pure awareness, pure beingness, pure seeing, and then that we can do what we need to do, and we can have what we have,
yeah.
and we're not attached. By the way, I want to let you know that I teach twice a month,
mm-hmm.
on the second and fourth Monday of every month here in a private home in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
And they can read my teaching schedule on my website, jimdriever.com.
Okay. And so what is it that you are doing on the second and fourth Monday evenings? Give us an example.
Yeah,
of
we gather in a group for silent meditation, and then I teach out of my the moment. Mm-hmm. I teach people how to be in the moment more and more.
Mm-hmm.
They're caught up in the stories, and the less they're caught up in the stories, the more present they are. I say in my book, the Flowing and Freedom book, you're either present or you're lost in a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. And most people identify with their stories, right? The ego, the me that the storyteller is, it tells all these stories. It is addicted to our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I teach people how to break that addiction by seeing that it's not even real. It's only imagination in our mind's eye. The stories are only imaginary.
Right.
The whole world between our ears, me, myself, my story, is an illusion. When you see that, yet you with the seeing are free.
Yeah.
Here now.
Is it important for us as individuals to begin the process of maybe not only going through the steps of flowing in freedom, but also in terms of getting there, to begin to sort of take an inventory of our lives to this extent, that we begin to surround ourselves with the people and, shall we say, the events, like, for example, going every second and fourth Monday to hear your talks or other like conversations or presentations, and begin the process of weeding out those people and circumstances that aren't supporting our decision to want to live in the now?
Yeah, yeah, that happens. It's
sort of a natural, universal
outcome.
Oh, you're going to do that? All right, well, then we'll clear the table.
Exactly. It happens. It just, when you're on the spiritual path, you begin to attract like-minded friends and people to you.
Do you look at, I don't necessarily want to get too far into this, but do you look at the changing relationships in your life as part of that process?
Absolutely. I've been married and divorced twice. I've had a number of long-term relationships, and I've been in my relationship now for 5 years, and it's a great relationship, but it's based on consciousness, presence. Mm-hmm. You know, my partner's a very spiritually awake woman with a lot of love in her heart, which is the bottom line, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, love is what we are.
Yeah.
And the freer we are of our story, the more open we are to the love that's our true nature, the happiness that is our true nature.
Mm. So that's not really something that the conscious part is making the decision to want to begin this process.
Yes.
And to get on with the business of our spiritual walk.
Yes.
And that the universe will acknowledge that by beginning to clear the path for us.
It does. Yeah, it's amazing how it happens.
Yeah. And then that way, do you find that, using the analogy of water taking the path of least resistance, that since you've been on your spiritual path, has it been the path of least resistance?
Well, it's when I gave up my resistance, when I give up when I learned to give up my resistance to what it was, everything flows much easier. Yes. It flows. My life flows. I flow in freedom, as I said. It's great. I'm just always here now. I honor the past. Mm-hmm. I keep an eye on the future, including goal setting and making plans and so on, like we made a plan to come here today to the radio station. Mm-hmm. But I live in the present. I live here now, awake and alive, consciously embrace this moment, the present moment.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for coming in studio again and chatting with us. This is, I think, very valuable for folks to get their hands on. They can go to jimdrever.com. We'll be linked to your website as well, and to have folks get a copy of Following in Freedom, Mastering the Skill, Mastering the Shift into True Happiness. Flowing in Freedom is the title of the book, jimdrever.com. Jim, again, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And if I might, I may have asked you these questions, but it's been a long time since you've been on the program, a couple years,
yes.
I think at least. So I'm going to ask you these three final questions before we wrap up here. And again, thank you for so much time. First question is, who is Jim Drever?
I'm the same as you, a beautiful being.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Just get the message of love and freedom out there.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To deliver this message of love and freedom and happiness.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. We've been talking with Jim Drever, the author of Flowing in Freedom, Mastering the Shift into True Happiness. I couldn't ask for a better way of living, and it sounds kind of strange in one sense, Jim. It's so simple.
Yes.
That's the frustration in the mind. It is so simple, but the mind wants to make it complicated. Can you turn this into 57 steps?
Yeah, no. Just one step.
One step.
Be here now.
Absolutely. We encourage you to be here again the next time we come your way with Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until the next time, love to Lal.